Curtain Radio.
Well, we all know the importance of screening for skin cancers. We always know the importance, of course, for any screening for any cancers. But joining me in the studio, I've got three very handsome gentlemen. You made me say that. Joining us to explain about the incredible dedication, I suppose, from the Lions Group and also research here at Curtin University. So joining me right now is we have Gary Irvine, Director of Liaison Officer for Lions Cancer Institute. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
For coming on in. And we have John Osborne, who's the screening manager for Lions.
Thank you.
Are you cancer-free, skin cancer-free?
No.
You're not?
No, we've had little bits and pieces taken off over the years.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the benefits of getting older.
Just one. We won't make a list of it. We'll get to the research in a moment, because that's really important. It's great to know that this liaison has taken place. And it was, of course, in other areas of research, wasn't it, here at Curtin University?
Absolutely. The Lions Cancer Institute initially funded a large liver cancer collaborative, and it was their funding, along with a lot of the state funding, that really initiated liver cancer research here in the state.
Well, funding is necessary for research, for obvious reasons, and I guess with the Lions Group and the history of the work that you men and people, well, everyone do for Lions, is just fantastic in the community. Gary, tell us about, just if you don't mind, the brief history of the Lions.
Sure. I guess it started around about 1990, late 80s really, but then we became the Lions Cancer Institute in 1990, and formally the Lions organisation began the process of developing that. And from there in 1993 we did our first skin cancer screening in a very small caravan in Muckenbuddin, and it's progressed from there. And today we go out some 40 locations in the state, which John drives and tell you about. And from that, we've built up a team of volunteers, because everything we do is voluntary. And we've started off with a truck and a trailer. We progressed to a van that we've got now. And John will tell you about our new unit, which we're hoping to commission next year.
These items don't come cheaply. If you're looking at upgrading your fabulous vehicles and so on, I mean, where do you get the funding from? Just the general public?
Well, funding comes from, first of all, Lions Clubs.
I mean that. Who gives you the money then?
Who gives us the money? Yeah, the Lions Clubs have, in this project we're doing now, give us money each year.
Okay.
Also, we get funding from the Lions International, and I'm talking about our new unit specifically here. And also, donations from the business community that support us and allow us to do our screening project and also the research.
Funding, like I say, is really important, but if you're involved with an international Lions group, is screening important in other countries? I mean, sunburned countries?
Yeah, I'll say not so much throughout the rest of the world, certainly in Australia and New Zealand, where statistically, you know, we have extraordinarily high rates of skin cancer.
Yeah.
And we're working very close with our New Zealand line counterparts at the moment to get a screening program up and running there. It has taken a while, but I'm afraid Lions Clubs tend to move pretty slowly, Jim. But we get there in the end.
No, you do. There's no two ways about it. So to make it clear that you're part of the Lions Club, but you're specifically working on this research. Well, we've got the research, of course, but with the mobile units that go out to the country areas.
Yes, that's
right. Okay, we've got that right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so but the Lions Clubs per se, they have fundraising events, don't they, to get monies that they can pass on to people like yourself.
That's correct.
Or your group. Yeah. Tell us about this glamorous van that you take around. It must be high tech.
Well, it would have been high tech when the coach that we currently have was first built in 1986.
Okay, things have moved on a bit.
But we had it modified to suit our purposes, but it is getting a bit long in the tooth now, and cost of maintenance is fairly high. So we're taking the best bits out that we had with the coach, and we're getting a purpose-built vehicle done, which we hope to have available for us by about February next year.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, the areas that you visit, are they presenting with fairly high cases of skin cancers? Are they coming out positive?
Yeah, from the records we keep, about 23% of the people that we see, we refer on with what we call suspicious lesions. So we don't diagnose anything. We just refer them on to their GP so that further tests can be made. So that number really hasn't changed over the years. So
it's not increasing then, the incidence?
Incidence that we record remaining fairly static.
Okay, so that's probably
a slight decrease, if anything.
Well, I mean, us baby boomers are the good example of growing up with olive oil all over our skin and burnt peeling noses and backs and, you know, cold tea on the back at night that Mum used to try and get the sting out of us all. And, I mean, we weren't aware, but we certainly are these days. And I suppose it's the older generation that's presenting with skin cancers concerns.
Yes, if we look at that, it is the older people that are the ones that we're referring. But what we also discover, which is important, is that when we do a screening, we find that about 60% to 70% of the people have not had a skin check in the preceding 2 years, and about half of those have never. So that
I have never.
That number hasn't changed.
That is interesting. I wonder if it's because we don't want to hear any bad news. You know, well, we are human beings. We don't want to be told, you know, there's a possibility you could have this. And it's a pretty bad outcome for a lot of people, isn't it?
As John would endorse, when we go into the country areas where we target in the main, because people in town can go and get a screening from their local GP, that many times we're getting the message from the wives who say, well, I've been telling him for months to go and get that looked at. It happens so often.
It does, and they've worked out in the sun all their lives. What about younger people coming through? Are they conscious of protection with the surfers and the beachgoers and sports people?
Yeah, some of them are conscious of protection.
Yeah.
But a lot of them seem to think it's not going to happen to me.
Well, that's a wish. You see, that's exactly what I think we keep ourselves in the dark a bit. How often, we'll get to the research because this is really important with the conjunction with Curtin University, how often should we be getting checked? Every couple of years?
Oh, that or earlier.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, every 12 months maybe.
So just to reiterate, I know it's been, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but one of the things we do with the information we give out when people come to be screened is information on how to check yourself, what to look for.
About to ask that.
So that's everybody gets one of those.
Yeah. Are we prone to be showing skin cancers, you know, early stages, I suppose, in spots that were blatantly in the sun? I mean, if we were covered with our bathers and that sort of thing?
Doesn't necessarily follow that because you've got a suspect melanoma, for example, that it was caused by the sun. There are many reasons and places where we find suspect melanomas.
What's the most unusual?
And people say, well, the most unusual one is on the soles of your feet. Now, when was the last time you had yours checked, Jen?
I can't get down that far. But the thing is with it, when you're laying, as we used to do, we'd be laying on our back or on our stomachs and the soles of our feet were exposed to the sun. So that was exposure, wasn't it, really?
Well, it was, but that may not have been the actual cause.
Oh.
It could just be anywhere. I mean, we've found them on the edge of people's elbows, inside the crease of the elbow.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily follow that you have to sustain sun damage to have a melanoma.
That is interesting, isn't it? And, of course, we've seen a lot of people that have had pieces taken out of their face. I mean, there's quite an amazing amount of surgery that's required to remove a very tiny spot.
Yeah.
Is there any other way of treatment other than removal?
Dependent on the, I'm only answering this because I'm a screener as well.
Okay.
It depends on the type of lesion.
Ah, right.
And many common lesions that we see, and particularly in folk that have had sun exposure, basal cell carcinomas and squamous cell carcinomas, where they can maybe develop into something more serious, dependent upon the patient, but all of those need to be attended to and not just left.
So if the baby boomers are showing signs of skin cancers or prospective skin cancers, it's taken all these years for it to present itself?
Well, part of what we do in answering your question is we provide a free full body skin cancer screening.
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, we're looking over where there's skin and we're talking to the patient consequently around issues we see. But we're verbalising what we see, and then we give them a report at the
end. I'm probably asking, does it take a melanoma to become dangerous, even if you've got sun damage from a young age, to our age, for it to present itself? Can it take a while?
It can happen much quicker than that.
So a child could present with skin cancers?
Sure.
Now, have you found that be the case sometimes?
Sometimes on very rare occasions, yes.
Oh, dear.
Young people, yeah.
So blockouts and everything, are they effective enough?
Well, we suggest people use 55 plus. We don't nominate any brand, of course, but...
And to change...
Yeah, top
up.
We will give them, as part of the notes in their referral gen, they should talk to their GP.
It's a very serious situation, isn't it, Peter? And the connection with the Lions Group here and Curtin University goes back to the liver research quite some time ago. Were you involved in that area?
Yeah, I do a little bit of liver research, mostly through the Liver Cancer Collaborative, but it's, to be honest with you, it's a very small part of it. Most of it is done through the Harry Perkins.
So
through
what sort of, what area do you take on when they go and screen people? Do you look at the future of dealing with skin cancers?
Well, yeah, exactly. So that's a really good question, and there's a lot of really good questions that you asked earlier about the time it takes for these melanomas to progress. So it's accumulation of mutations within single cells that causes these cells to start proliferating irregularly. And that can take weeks, even, but most of the time it takes decades.
That's what I was wondering.
There's an accumulation of the mutations inside these cells.
There are no symptoms early, though, are there?
Well, you can, because you get these nevi. So these little skin blotches on your skin, and everybody thinks, oh, it's just a little, you know.
What, dryness?
Not dryness, but you actually little...
Like a mark, a coloured mark.
A little coloured mark.
Okay.
And anytime you have those coloured marks, you already have those mutations there, but it hasn't become a full-blown cancer yet. You were also talking about treatments earlier. Melanoma is one of the most easily treated diseases out there because you can cut it away.
Okay.
So the question is, with melanoma, if you diagnose it early enough, which these gentlemen tried to do, you just go to your local GP or your local surgeon and they'll just take a little incision and cut it away.
Okay.
The problem is when that now has started to spread to other organs.
So if you've left it too late to be checked.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's why it's so important to get these screenings done early.
Well, you know, we don't look at our entire body for spots or things, marks, do we? I mean, it takes probably a partner to say, oh, by the way, that looks as though it's changing or something.
Mm.
So the ones that, you know, the areas that would be most obvious would be the ones that we were doing that not that I did, I'm too fair-skinned, I didn't like it a great deal, but some do. They're still down there at the beach and having a go.
Some of us innocently had jobs when we were 20 years of age out in the sun.
And sports people.
Yeah.
I mean, the cricketers started wearing zinc creams and things on lips and that. Is that sufficient, Peter, do you think?
Well, I think what was discussed earlier, that if you have an impact factor 55 or higher, I mean, that usually tends to block out the majority of the sun rays, and that'll offer good protection for, you know, for about the length of time that for any regular physical activity, around 40, 45 minutes.
Yeah, but you'd have to top up, wouldn't you, if you're swimming and that sort of thing. So it is a big responsibility, isn't it, with your family when you go down to the beach and sit there for a couple of hours. And so sun exposure, what length of time, even if you've got blockout, do you think it can become dangerous after that, if you haven't got the blockout, is what I'm saying?
Difficult question to answer because it varies. Some people will take, as John said, no notice at all.
Yeah.
Just go to the beach and spend half the day there.
Yeah.
But whilst they're there, and they probably feel a little sunburnt when they get home, it's just constant damage to your skin.
Yeah.
And it's not necessary.
What about different types of skin that people have? I mean, we Aussies, most of us are fairly fair skinned from English heritage, I suppose. What about our dark skinned friends? Are they prone to skin cancers?
Certainly are.
Oh, right.
Yeah, we screen when we go north, Aboriginal communities. And we've found suspect lesions on many of them, where you would imagine that being dark-skinned, it wouldn't affect them. Peter may have some history around that.
Well, a lot of the times you think it's not that necessarily that the dark skin blocks the radiation. You still get that accumulation of that mutations with inside your DNA from prolonged exposure.
How are we going with research into this? It seems to me, from what I can hear from you, is that you have to be checked regularly, you need to act on it very quickly, and hopefully it'll keep it at bay. Is there anything else that you think with your research?
Well, I think you have to go back looking 20, 25 years to melanoma research. It was when, basically at the turn of the century, where we started sequencing the human genome, we recognized that about 50% of these melanomas had a mutation in a gene called BRAF. And that was causing a lot of these melanomas to start proliferating uncontrollably. And a lot of companies started making drugs specifically targeting BRAF, and there were some wonderful responses. And everybody thought that would be a cure for melanoma. But it turns out, even if you have these wonderful drugs, you're always going to get these resistant mechanisms. The tumor is just going to find a way to sort of grow out and find different mechanisms to
evade
it. It's very clever. And about 10 years ago, immunotherapy came into the picture. And melanoma is the poster child for immunotherapy. And immunotherapy has completely revolutionized the treatment of melanoma. But again, only 50% of the patients that receive immunotherapy actually do really well on this. And the other 50%, for whatever reasons we don't know, they just don't react to the immunotherapy.
So what is the treatment with immunotherapy?
Well, there's basically, you're trying to get the host's immune cells to specifically target.
How is it applied?
It's just, you can actually take it as a pill.
Oh, really? Yeah. My goodness. So that's what you're working on, or?
So we're actually looking at those 50% of those tumors that aren't reactive to immunotherapy and that have these BRAF mutations. So we're trying to understand exactly why these tumors keep growing in the presence of the drug.
Yeah.
And we're trying to find out ways to sort of new drugs that we can put on top of that to make sure these tumors go away.
Can you go a bit faster?
Yes.
Whenever we hear these wonderful things you're all working on and everything, oh, that's probably 5 years away. No.
Well, I think something very, very important with all these cancer drugs is you're always limited by, do we see what we think we're going to see?
Yeah.
Right? So we have an hypothesis, we try to prove it, and we see it happening in cell lines, and we see it happening in early animal models. But when we get to the patients, for some reason, we just don't see it.
That's why it takes so long.
And the other thing, of course, is toxicity, right? So a lot of the cancer drugs that we give to patients, there's toxic side effects.
Yeah.
And so that really limits how much of these drugs that we can give to the patients, right?
People like you guys should be put on pedestals. Rock stars, nah. No, I've always thought that. I mean, you know, we have people that can sing and play football and everything. They're great because they're talented, but you guys just do it all quietly and it all gets done. And just finally, when are you out and about again with your new fabulous technology-bound vehicle?
That'll be February next year if we're lucky. This weekend we are out at Brookton and Beverley.
Oh, okay. Have people booked to get screened? Yep. They need to do that.
Oh, yes.
How do they find out when they're going to be coming, when you're going to be getting to their area?
Right. As Gary mentioned earlier, we screened predominantly in the country areas.
Yep.
We have a website. That's the Lions Cancer Institute.
Yeah.
And just this morning I put up where we're going to be and where we're going to be and when for the rest of the year.
How far and why do you go?
Yeah, we'll go to Kununurra down to Esperance. But that'll be done on about a two-year cycle.
Oh, that is fantastic. Yeah. When did you start doing this? Did you say the 90s?
The first screening.
Oh, that is wonderful. Great work. How many volunteers do you have in your group? Any idea?
Well, we have a large number of screeners who volunteer. Yeah. So we look at anything between 15 and 25 that are on list, and they're called up as they're available.
Okay.
And, of course, we've got all the Lions clubs and the community recreation councils that support us when we go to these country areas. It's a social occasion.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I know you Lions mob. I know a few Lions. And, Peter, just finally, what involvement do you have now with this group, with the Lions group?
So basically, the Lions has funded a PhD student in my lab. to do this research. And then that person is going to be hopefully starting in the next month or so.
That's great.
And continue on. But just generally, quickly, I just want to highlight how much time and effort the Lions Cancer Institute has put into analyzing and looking at these patients across WA for the last 30 years.
Yeah, it's great.
They go out 40 weekends a year. They travel up and down the country. It's their own time, their own effort.
Yeah.
And I forget the actual number, but I think you've looked at 50 to 100,000 patients over the last couple
that
of years.
That is phenomenal.
Since we kept records.
Yeah.
Upwards of 90,000.
You all deserve medals. Yeah. Thank you very, very much for your time. Gentlemen, that was Mr. Peter Elkon, John Osborne, and Mr. Gary Irvine.